You've probably all heard of George Washington Carver. George Washington Carver was a famous American scientist who lived in the late 19th and early 20th century. Does anybody know what George Washington Carver was famous for working with? Peanuts, that's right. And often he would be asked, why, Dr. Carver, a great scientist like you, why would you devote your life to working with peanuts? And he would often answer by telling the following story. Maybe you've heard it. He would say, well, when I was a young boy, I said to God, God, would you please tell me the mystery of the universe? And God said to me, George, that mystery is for me alone to know. He said, okay, so I went back to God and I said, okay, God, can you at least tell me the mystery of the peanut? And God said to me, George, a peanut is about your size. And so he told me the mystery of the peanut. And I tell you that today because it is a lead into the topic we're going to discuss. We're in a sermon series right now on the fruits of the Spirit. We've been in this for 2 months now. We're almost done. And today we come to the fruit of the Spirit called gentleness. Gentleness, there's a synonym for gentleness that probably you know better, at least I know better, and that is the word humility. And so this morning I'm going to use the word humility in place of gentleness just because it's a word that we're a little bit more familiar with. And the text that we're going to read is the one that I just stepped in front of Cheryl on. Cheryl, you were going to come and read this, weren't you? Where's Cheryl? There you are. I'm sorry. I just jumped right in there. Is it okay if I read it? I was so anxious to get started, I just jumped right in front of you there. Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. This is one of the most famous passages in the Bible on the topic of humility. Paul says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. And each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. And so we're going to explore just a little bit what that topic has to tell us about humility. And when we're done today, there are really three things that I hope you'll go away understanding. First of all, what humility is. Secondly, what humility is not. And thirdly, some practical ideas about how you can pursue humility. So let's begin with what humility is. The word humility itself is a very simple Greek word. It means gentle, modest, deferring to others. In Greek literature, it's interesting because whenever you see the word humility or humble, in Greek literature specifically, it's always in a derogatory way. It has a negative connotation. In the Greco-Roman society, humility as a virtue was not valued. To be deferential, to be gentle, to be modest, these were not things that a person was told that they should aspire to. Because to be gentle, to be deferential, to be modest, these were what a slave was to be. But not a person who was wanting to advance themselves in society. And so humility was not something that people valued in that culture. What they valued was strength and respect. And what the understanding was that the way you got respect was by getting people to fear you. And if people were afraid of you, then they would respect you. And if people were held in respect, then that's what would hold society together. So what was valued was strength and creating fear, not being a person who was gentle, humble, modest, deferential, and these kinds of things. In fact, if you look at the writings of the Greek philosophers, Aristotle, Plato, and so on, they talk a lot about many of the virtues that we value today. But there is one virtue that you'll never find mentioned in the Greek philosophers' writings, and that is the virtue of humility because it was not something they valued. And then when you get to the Bible, which was written, the New Testament was written right at the same time, you see a completely different worldview because the word humility appears in the Bible 270 times. And every time it appears, or almost every time it appears, it has a positive connotation, something that you want to aspire to. And so, really, you have this values clash over this one virtue of humility. Greco-Roman society said, no, you don't want that. The Bible says, yes, you do. It's something that you want in your life. And if you think about some of the things that Jesus said things like, blessed are the meek or the humble, for they shall inherit the earth. Jesus says, come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, for I am gentle and I am humble of spirit. These were really, we're so used to hearing these, they just kind of roll right off of us, but these were really revolutionary statements because what Jesus was saying was nothing less than God himself is humble. In fact, Paul really makes this point clear in Philippians 2, in the passage we're going to study today, because Paul goes out of his way to point out that Jesus, or that God in Jesus, was humble. He says in Philippians 2, verse 7, he says, but he says, he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. Okay, not something that the surrounding society would have said, that's a good thing to do. He says, taking the nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself. He became like a servant. And so in Philippians 2, Paul's writing to a largely Gentile audience, and he's coming to them with this prescription, because in their church, there's conflict between some of the religious leaders, and it's creating division in the church. And what is Paul's prescription? For the church, he says, you need more humility. Become humble. Become deferential to each other. Now, imagine how that would have sounded to a Gentile Christian. Are you kidding me? The prescription for our problem is to become more humble, to become more like a servant, to think more about the needs of others. Are you kidding me? But that's what Paul's recommending. And I want to focus specifically on one word that Paul uses here in verse 3 of Philippians 2. Paul says, do nothing out of self-ambition or vain conceit. That's the word that's used here in the new, NIV. Do nothing out of vain conceit, he says. Now, the word vain conceit is in Greek is actually just a single word. It's the word kenodoxius. The first part of that word, kena, means to empty oneself. It's kenosis. And then the second part of the word, doxia, means glory, honor, or respect. So kenodoxia means to be empty of glory, honor, or respect. Paul says, do nothing out of a sense of emptiness of glory, honor, and respect. Which is interesting because what Paul is really talking about here is this thing that all of us experience, where there's this sense that in our lives we need glory, we need honor, we need respect. We need this from other people. I mean, this is a cosmic need that we all have. And Paul says, don't do anything out of that need. And the Bible really gets right at this because the Bible tells us what the root of our problem is. The Bible says we were designed to live forever. We were designed for eternity. We were made so that we would never be forgotten. We were made to last. We were made to stand in the presence of God for eternity and to receive glory and honor and respect from God. But we have turned away from God. And because we've turned away from God, now we're fading. And there's this sense inside all of us, because we're afraid we're going to be forgotten. We're not going to get the glory and the honor and respect that we were made to receive from God. And so all of us, whether we're conscious of it or not, have this sense of kenodoxia, have this sense of being empty of glory, empty of honor, empty of the respect that we were made to receive from God. And to be glory empty is really what is the root of so many societal problems. Think about what a street gang is. What is a street gang made of? For the most part, gangs are made up of young men who don't feel valued. They feel like society doesn't value them. They feel like their families have abandoned them, don't appreciate them. They feel empty of glory. And they're looking for that. And so as a result of their looking for glory, looking for respect and feeling empty of that, all you have to do is slightly disrespect them and, they'll pull a knife on you or they'll pull a gun on you. They're desperate for respect, and so they'll fight for it because they want that. And you say, well, that's just gangs. But that's all of us. I mean, if you look at the history books, the history of the world, so much of what has led to war and conflict is when nation states themselves feel empty of glory, empty of respect, empty of value. Probably the best example of that is Germany right before World War II. Following World War I, they felt like they had been humiliated. They felt like they had no respect on the world stage. And so as a result of that, they were primed to go to war and to get that respect back, to fight for that. And this is really the condition of the human soul. We want respect, we want honor, we want glory. And when we operate out of that, all kinds of bad things are prone to take place. And yet Paul's prescription for that is, don't operate out of that, operate out of humility. Which brings up the question, well, what is humility? Well, we can begin by saying what humility is not. The opposite of humility is pride. So what I want you to do is I want you to think about someone you know who you consider prideful. And if you have nobody in your life who's proud, think of a prototype of a proud person. Now, my guess is that most of you, when you think of a proud person, what comes to your mind, some of the characteristics that come to your mind, are things like arrogance, someone who is a self-promoter, a bragger, just someone who's full of themselves, whatever that means, but someone who's full of themselves, someone who's pushy. These things. And certainly, these are definitely traits of pride. Now, if pride is the opposite of humility, does that then mean that in order to be a humble person, you basically have to have the exact opposite of all those traits of bragging and self-promotion and arrogance? Is humility the opposite of that? So basically, the more you have a low opinion of yourself, the lower your esteem goes. Basically, do you have to have an inferiority complex to be a humble person? Do you have to think you're worthless? Do you always have to be beating up on yourself? Are you have to be unable to accept a compliment? Are those the signs of a humble person? C.S. Lewis wrote a very famous book. It's called The Screwtape Letters. The Screwtape Letters is an interesting book because it's written from the perspective of the devil. And in The Screwtape Letters, you have the devil, who is Screwtape, and he's giving advice to a junior devil by the name of Wormwood. And he's giving basically advice on how to corrupt human beings, how to tempt them, how to get them off course, how to, you know, destroy their lives, basically. And so when you read the Screwtape Letters, you almost kind of have to turn yourself upside down, because what you're reading is, here's how the devil operates. And when you know how the enemy operates, then you know how to counter him. That's the whole idea behind the book. Now, in the book, there's a very interesting part, because the devil, or Screwtape, is giving advice to Wormwood on humans, who he calls his patients, on how to destroy humility. Listen to his advice on how to deal with people who are humble. He says, "I see that your patient has become humble." He says, "Self-hatred and a low opinion of oneself can do us demons much good. Self-contempt can be the starting point for a life contemptuous of all other people, and therefore a life filled with gloom, cynicism, and cruelty. So let your patient think of humility as a low opinion of his talents and character. And then he goes on to say, "By this method, thousands of humans have been brought to believe that humility means pretty women trying to believe that they are ugly and clever men trying to believe that they are fools." Do you hear what the devil is saying here? He says, try to get people to believe that to be humble, they have to think they're worthless. They have to think that whatever talents they have are terrible. That if they're beautiful, they're really ugly. If they're clever, they're really stupid. And the lower opinion you can have of yourself, that's what it means to be humble. And he's saying, get people to believe that, because then they'll wreck their lives. It'll really mess them up. See, real humility is not thinking less of yourself. As I heard someone say one time, humility is not thinking lower of yourself. It's just thinking about yourself less of the time, to where you're not constantly at the center of your own world. But it doesn't mean you have a low opinion of yourself. Because here's what happens. If you think you're worthless, and if you don't like yourself, you're not going to like other people. That's just a fact of life. And when you don't like other people, you're going to be mean and you're going to be cruel. And this is hardly what humility is about leading us to. I have a file in my office where I store things on different topics, and I have one on the subject of humility. And I found in there something, it doesn't have the name of the person who wrote this, but it's applicable to what we're talking about. It says, "One of the greatest dangers in the spiritual life is self-rejection. When we say, if people really knew me, they wouldn't love me, that's when we choose the road to darkness. Often we are made to believe that self-depreciation is a virtue called humility. But humility is in reality the opposite of self-depreciation. Humility is the grateful recognition that we are precious in God's eyes and that all that we are is a pure gift. To grow beyond self-rejection, we must have the courage to listen to the voice calling us God's beloved sons and daughters, and the determination always to live our lives according to this truth." See, humility really is about getting at what's most true about you. Not thinking less of yourself than you should, not thinking more of yourself than you should, but seeing yourself accurately. Seeing yourself for what you really are. Seeing yourself in a way that's true. Paul talks about this in Romans 12:3. He says, "Do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the measure of faith that God has given to you." So humility really is just accurate self-assessment, seeing yourself as you really are, not more and not less. I came across a piece of paper, and it was a list that I had made at one time. I don't know if it was some notes that I maybe was taking at a seminar or what, but it lists the traits of a humble person. And here's what it says on this piece of paper. It says, humble people sacrifice their personal ego needs for the good of the larger cause or organization. Humble people are able to hear and accept being told no. Humble people can handle being told no. Humble people are able to accept other people's boundaries even when they don't like them. Humble people are okay even when not getting the credit that they deserve. And humble people recognize their dependence on other people and circumstances for getting them where they are. In other words, they don't think, I did this all myself. And it's that last one about dependence on other people and circumstances for getting them where they are. It reminds me of a story one time I heard about a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. He and his wife were traveling by car, and they pulled into a service station to get gas. And so the CEO went inside to pay for the gas, and when he came back outside, he saw that his wife was in a deep conversation with the service station attendant. And the CEO watched this for a while, and then eventually the woman finished the conversation with the service station attendant. Well, it turns out that the service station attendant was her old high school flame, her old boyfriend from high school, the guy that she had dated just before she met the guy that she eventually married, the eventual CEO. Well, so they get back in the car, and the CEO and his wife, they drove off in silence. And as they're driving in silence, the CEO is feeling pretty good about himself. And finally, he turns to his wife and he says, honey, I bet I know what you're thinking. I bet you're thinking how lucky you are that you married me, the Fortune 500 CEO, and not him, the service station attendant. She said, well, actually, darling, what I was thinking was that if I had married him, he'd be a Fortune 500 CEO and you'd be a gas station attendant. And it all goes back to humility is about realizing you're not a self-made person. You didn't get to where you are all by yourself. There are other people, other events, other circumstances that got you to where you are. Now, Proverbs 6:3 says these very words, humble thyself in the sight of the Lord. Humble thyself in the sight of the Lord. Which brings the question, how do you humble yourself? If I want to develop more humility, how exactly do I go about doing that? And this morning I want to give you three practical steps that you can truly apply and that will help you become a humble person. In fact, I'm so confident in these, I'm giving you a money-back guarantee. If they don't work a month from now, you get your money back, okay? But they really do work. Steps toward humility. I'm going to give you three steps. Step number one, don't pretend you are what you know you're not. Don't pretend that you are what you know you aren't. In other words, be yourself. We talked about this last week when we talked about integrity. But don't be the person who you know you are not. And you know, all of us have this temptation at different times to be someone other than who we are, to fit our circumstances, to please the people around us, whatever it may be. In Greek theater, there was a term for someone who would wear a mask in order to play a part in the play. And the term they had for a person who would wear a mask in order to play a part was a hypocrite. Now, when we hear hypocrite, immediately we think of something negative. But in Greek theater, it was just a word for someone who wore a mask to play a part. Jesus came along and Jesus took that word and he applied it to people who basically wore a spiritual mask to play a part, to be somebody who they really weren't. And Jesus says, don't be a hypocrite. Don't be someone in public religiously who you know you really aren't, just to try to impress people so they'll think you're so pious and so spiritual. Jesus says, don't do that. Don't play a part. Just be yourself. Because true humility claims nothing more and nothing less than to be exactly what you are. That's it. That's what humility does. And of course, this is something we've all done and something we're all tempted to do. But if you were to make a conscious effort to wherever I go from now on, or just for the next week, I'm just going to be myself. I'm not going to put on airs. I'm not going to say things to try to project myself with someone other than I am. I'm just going to be myself. That's the first step that you can take toward humility. Be yourself. Step number two, don't presume. Don't presume to know what other people are thinking and feeling. So often, we think we know what's going on in another person's heart. We know what they're thinking. We know what they're feeling, especially when they do something we don't like. We know the motive for it, right? You know, it's so easy to judge another person's heart, to act as if we know their motives. Oh, they did that just because they're a control freak. Or they did that just because, you know, they're greedy. It's all about the money for them. Or they did it just because they think they're better than me. The truth is, we don't know why they did or said what they did. But it's so easy to judge another person's motives, especially when we don't like what they say or do. And when we judge another person's motives, when we act as if we know what's in their heart, we're really creating problems for ourselves. In some ways, it's a form of self-protection, but in many ways, we create problems for ourselves. In fact, Jesus addresses this in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew 7, verses 1 through 5, he says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way that you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you used, it will be measured to you. So why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there was a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." See, when we judge a person's motives, when we assume that we know what they're thinking and what they're feeling and what's behind their words and actions, what we're doing is we're basically clouding our vision, as Jesus would call it. There's a huge board in our eye, because from that point on, we see everything that that person does and says through the lens of the motive that we have ascribed to them. And so often the motive that we ascribe to them is wrong. And it's going to cause us to see their actions incorrectly. It's going to cause us to hear their words differently than what they really meant it to be. If we're going to see people clearly, we have to remove the plank from our eye. We have to remove the judgment that we have placed on their words and on their actions when we think we know the motive behind what's really in their heart. The other thing that judgment does, and of course we don't think about it this way, but really, when we judge another person's motives, we're putting ourselves in the place of God. You know, the Bible says, man looks on the outward appearance, the Lord looks on the heart, which is a statement of the human condition. All we can do is see the exterior. Only God can see the heart. And when we assume that we can see the heart, we're putting ourselves in the place of God. And when we're putting ourselves in the place of God, we're hardly in a position of humility. We've put ourselves way, way out of where we're supposed to be. So what does the humble person do? The humble person refrains from making snap judgments, from assuming that they know a person's motives. They refrain from hasty conclusions. And when a humble person doesn't know, they just simply say, I don't know why they did that. I don't know. So that's number two. Don't presume to know another person's motives. Don't presume to know their heart. Number three, don't push. Don't push or try to override the will of another person. Going back to the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7:6, Jesus has a very interesting statement here. It comes right after the part about judgment. He says, do not give to dogs what is sacred, and do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. Now, what in the world is Jesus talking about here? Dogs, pigs, pearls, people being torn to pieces? How many of you own a dog? Quite a few of you. Okay, for those of you who own a dog, I want you to try an experiment this week. Whenever the usual feeding time is for your dog, instead of taking your dog food or table food or whatever you usually feed your dog, I want you to take your dog some pearls and put the pearls in the dog dish. And every day when you go to feed your dog, put another pearl in the dog dish. And when your dog starts to complain, explain to them, look, dog, these are beautiful, valuable pearls. You should be so appreciative. And see how your dog responds. And one morning, I don't know how many days it'll take, but at some point, you'll go out to put pearls in your dog's dish, and you'll find that your dog, instead of being appreciative, will turn and attack you. Because the dog doesn't know what to do with pearls, but it does know what to do with you. At least you're edible. Pearls are not. And here's what Jesus is getting at here. Sometimes in our efforts to fix people, to help people, to get them on the right track, to make them who we think they should be, we try to push our pearls on them. We try to push on them the things that are really valuable to us, that have really made a difference in our life, that we genuinely think if this person would just value what I value, would they just see this as a pearl, like it's a pearl to me, that it would do them so much good. And there's this human tendency to push our pearls on other people to try to fix them. And, you know, pearls, the pearls that we push on people could be anything. It could be some new diet or diet supplement or some new exercise routine that's worked so well for us. We try to push it on somebody else. It could be some social activity that's made our lives so much better, and so we're just sure the person next to us needs to have it too. It could be our religious beliefs or our religious practices or our political beliefs, something that we just hold near and dear to our heart and that other people just have to have, and so we try to push those on them. And the reality of the human is nobody likes to be pushed. Nobody likes to be pushed. We like to be led, but we don't like to be pushed. We want the freedom to think things through, to decide for ourselves, based on what we believe is best for ourselves. And Jesus says, don't push your pearls on other people, because all they'll do is turn and they'll attack you. And the humble person knows that the will of another person is to be respected. Even if we don't like their will, even if we disagree with their will, it's there to be respected. And so we don't try to override it. We don't try to push through it. We don't try to push pearls where they're not wanted. I heard a story not long ago about a young man who went to a British town where there was a mountain just behind the town, and he wanted to climb that mountain. But when he got to that town, the people there warned him. They said, this mountain is higher than you think. The weather is worse than you think. This is not an easy climb. You've got to be careful. But this young man, he was full of confidence, and he was just sure he could do this. And so he didn't worry about taking the right weather gear. He didn't worry about taking the right things to climb a tall mountain. He just, in his confidence, with his head held high, he went out one morning and went up the mountain. And several hours later, he returned to town, crestfallen, with his head sagging because he hadn't been able to climb the mountain. He hadn't even got halfway up the mountain. And as he came into town, there was an old lady who met him. She knew about his desire to climb this mountain, and she looked at him, and she knew that he hadn't made it. And she said, "Son, if you had gone up the way you came down, you would have come down the way that you went up." In other words, "Son, if you had gone up the mountain with your head down in humility, then you would have been able to come down the mountain with your head held high." Which is simply another way of saying, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, and he will exalt you in due time.